Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive, says so out on the hat. Big thanks to all of our sponsors out there, including our friends at State Fair. I got to get over there for some chicken and waffles here sometime soon. All the places we eat, you know, like Fadley's, got to get some crab cakes. Got to get the Pizza John's. Hadn't been to Pizza John's in a couple of weeks. They are introducing a new crab cake, and I will try it. But I've only had one pepperoni and pineapple pizza thus far. My wife still has not had a pepperoni and pineapple pizza. She's not jonesing for it or anything. But I'm going to make her eat it on Super Bowl Sunday so we can all have a good time. And Planet Fitness, our friends, back on the mat, doing it safely. I'm going to get Teddy on the program in a couple of weeks. But as we get into the offseason, we've now had a John Harbaugh press conference. We've now had an Eric DaCosta press conference. I guess the days of Steve Bisciotti stepping out in front of people are over. I don't know. I'm going to be checking in with Dick Cass and all of that in the offseason as everything has gotten a little weird. Luke Jones joins us now. He is Baltimore Luke, and Luke at WNST.net. You can find him anywhere the Ravens are, anywhere the Orioles want to be, anywhere the Terps might be or might not be, depending on what day of the week or what time of the day it is, whether they're going to play. Back when I thought like football games on Wednesday afternoons were weird. Luke, we're officially off season. We're officially not going to Tampa next week. I'm wearing my Ravens Super Bowl gear. For anybody that tunes into WNST or checks out Baltimore Positive this week, you will see just a litany of memories and current conversations. I mean, gosh, I've got 20 years worth of conversations with every member of the team virtually about Super Bowl memories. But I'm checking in with people now this week in the here and now, and I'm wearing my gear. The patch is still burns bright, Luke Jones. Let me tell you that from 20 years ago Thursday for Whiskey Joe's and all the dearly departed and the Bobby Nicks and the, my God, the Chuck Evans, the people we know that we've lost along the way. You know, this is a celebration, I think. And for anybody that remembers this moment here or this moment here, it's going to be a fun week here at WNST because that's where I'm rolling this week. How about that?
No question about it. I mean, and it's a great reminder of how great the last two decades have been. Now, it hasn't just been one of those. There have been two of those here in Baltimore. And the memories.
Well, I'm not
going to
think about Flacco this week. He's yesterday's news, you know. So.
But it is a reminder, especially as we are hearing from John Harbaugh, we hear from Eric DaCosta, a season that in some ways you certainly view as, hey, they won a playoff game, they overcame 6-5, and losing 4 out of 5 coming out of the bye week and the COVID outbreak. But at the same time, it's a second straight divisional round exit. And knowing just how darn good this team was in 2019 and how well they were playing at the end of 2020, it does leave you wanting a little bit more. And I think that's reasonable. And because we're talking about what happened two decades ago and that standard that started with that 2000 team and has
60-minute ball game.
You know, that's why fans have high expectations. And that's a good thing, by the way. That's not to say people should be entitled or spoiled or take anything for granted. But yeah, the Ravens want more than what they accomplished in 2020. And you heard that from John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta. So the challenge now is going about doing that, understanding that, you know, there are other teams vying for the same thing. And they're going to see the Kansas City Chiefs playing in the Super Bowl for the same second straight year and what Buffalo did. And so you're always trying to get better. It's a matter of how you go about doing that. And when you talk about the uncertainty that still exists with the pandemic, certainly more light at the end of the tunnel now than a few months ago with vaccine distribution, you know, slowly but surely moving along there. But what does that disrupt in the meantime between now and kicking off the 2021 season in September? We know the draft is going to be different. There's not going to be a combine. So that evaluation process is going to be quite different other than, you know, maybe the Senior Bowl this week, which is one of the few exceptions. So you have that. What does free agency look like? What does the spring off-season program look like? What does training camp look like? What does the start of the regular season look like? All of those things, I assume, will be better than this past year, but it doesn't mean that you aren't still going to have some challenges ahead. So in addition to all of those things, oh yeah, you want to try to improve your passing game some more. You'd like to upgrade your offensive line that had some issues with pass protection. They have 16 pending free agents who played for them last year, not just guys that, you know, were stashed on IR or something like that. So
including the hard feelings of Morgan Cox this week and Mark Ingram last week and probably, you know, Matt Judon and, you know, it's a couple of other guys that are coming. This is going to be I don't want to say tumultuous, but there's going to be turnover. There always is, but there's going to be, you know, they have decisions to make because they realize they're not good enough. They're close, but they were close last year and dealed off Hayden Hurst, you know? So, and they were close this year and signed Ngakoue, and they were close a year and a half ago and gave Earl Thomas all that money. So Eric talking about being more patient, Eric talking through some things. I threw him a text and I thought he did a nice job on Monday for what it is. I mean, again, most of these things are like frigging hostage videos. It was the best press conference I've seen the Baltimore Ravens organization give any member, it probably since the last time DaCosta did it. And I just learned a lot on Monday in a way that I don't. Harbaugh's going out of his way, so we learn nothing. The players are, frankly, useless for the most part, right? Like, you've given a lot of time to it. I've given a lot of time to it. We've given a lot of airwave to it, but it's not very good. And I thought Eric was good on Monday, so I at least want to tip my cap in that direction to feel as a, well, they would say stakeholder. I mean, everybody was in on the call. I mean, Don Moeller complimented your question, by the way. He thought your question was great. He threw me a text. So, I mean, it's not like a private, it's a public press conference where a handful of us get to ask questions. I didn't even raise my hand. Literally, I don't know. All these things feel very perfunctory and very, we're going to give you as little as we can. I don't think Eric approached it that way. So I would say to anyone out there bored with it, and I'm one of it, I've stopped on the Wednesdays. I hate the post games. The season's over. I'm done with it. I'm glad I'm done with it. It just wasn't any good. It was a bad TV show that I would have turned, a bad movie I would have walked out of.
Yeah. I mean, I can't blame you for feeling that way. And I certainly agree with and share many of those sentiments. And
I could go player by player and destroy all of them individually about, I'm just here to not talk about the past and we're just going to win one for the Gipper. And this is a tough team. And all of that. But, and it's just, go away. I mean, I do for a living, you know?
But you have to remember, a lot of these guys are coached that way even before they got to the Ravens.
I've met their agents, bro. Yeah, I've met their mother. I've met their spouse. I've met, you know, I've met their coach. I've met them all. So I get it. I get where I am. And I'm just saying Eric DaCosta was time well spent. If you care about the team and you're trying to learn something, he was in a little bit of teacher mode, a little bit of, you know, and some of it was to me organizational where, he's not heard of anyone that doesn't want to play with Lamar. Okay. I mean, and I like the bravado he had. Like, if you don't want to play with Lamar, we don't want you here. You know, that's cool. I felt that way about WNST for a long time. So I thought some of it was good in that way. Good in that way to say, if you want to win, you'll come here and play. And that's a good front because it's good for them to say that because they should say that.
Yeah, and I mean, and he also did make the comment that, you know, you have to make them an offer they won't refuse. I mean, money's the big factor there. And we'll bring this back, talking about wide receiver as the example. And, you know, can you attract a number one receiver? First of all, do you have the cap space to do that? And I thought that was that's something that you and I started talking about from the moment the season ended in Buffalo a couple weekends ago. But it really is going to be fascinating to see how this plays out. And now the Ravens are still in much better shape than a lot of teams. I mean, if you look, you know, you go to a site like overthecap.com, which they do a great job breaking down salary cap. It's not gospel. It's not 100% accurate because teams aren't broadcasting down to the penny how much cap space they have and deals they're redoing to create some more space. So
try to figure out what the coaches are making.
Yeah. So, but Eric DaCosta, you know, and he, you know, the numbers that he cited were very much in line with that website, which I thought was interesting. So, you know, overthecap.com, again, a pretty good resource there for not just the Ravens, but getting a picture of what the entire league looks like. But, you know, there's upwards of, you know, a dozen teams, you know, maybe give or take a few that are projected to be over the salary cap if we're looking at the salary cap being $175 million, which is kind of the lowest it can be this year that the players and the league agreed to last summer. We know it, you know, revenue was not what it was what it normally is in 2020. I think that's obvious when you look at either empty stadiums or very small capacities all
year. This is the point where I interject, and maybe the only time all week I'll do this, but you and I will get together and talk about Masson sometimes.
Oh, sure. Too, question about it. But as it relates to the 2021 season in the NFL, it is going to be a lower salary cap. It's just a matter of how much lower than the 5 million it was in 2020. Is it going to be nearly 25 million lower than that, or is it going to be 15 or 10 million lower than that? We know it's not going up. I mean, that much is clear. So from that standpoint, if you're the Ravens, it has to be so disappointing. And look, none of these teams in the league could have possibly imagined a year ago being in this position cap-wise and revenue-wise in the league. But if you're the Ravens, this was kind of the last year you were looking at and saying, well, this is the last year to really take advantage of that window, that proverbial window with an impact quarterback on a rookie contract. That kind of goes away a little
bit. And it's amazing, by the way, once Lamar hits at 35 million or whatever that number is going to be.
Probably 40.
Okay, as a cap number, whatever the number is, it's going to be extraordinary, right? It's going to be a quarter of, 20%, 18%, whatever that number is. And then, everybody who doesn't know their ass from their elbows, like, we need DeAndre Hopkins. Yeah, we need $18 million wide receiver too. I'm like, I don't, in an offense where we're not looking to do that, to me, this is something that they are so scientific about this. And watching Eric for an hour, look, man, I had to look up how long I've known Eric DaCosta and the day I met him. I met Eric DaCosta in 1997. Eric's been in my home. You know what I mean? Like, I know Eric really well and have flown on airplanes and rental cars and all of that, and watching him operate on Monday. And this is not me kissing his ass any more than Ozzie or anything else. It's just me more like how hard they work at this, how much goes into this. I remember 20 years ago how much it went into it when I used to track Phil Savage around and Brian Billick and Marvin Lewis was here and all those people will be here this week. A little plug for Super Bowl 35. But it's so sophisticated and it's so – the Ravens look at it in an analytic way that the next Billy Beane thing will be for football. So I'm often like asking questions, but I'm also asking questions I know they'll never answer. Or even if they answered, it might not make as much sense to me as Sig Meidel did to Major League Baseball 15 years ago. Because I do think the Ravens believe they're on the cutting edge of what they're doing in a lot of ways that maybe they're not doing that in Cincinnati right now, right? And whatever that competitive edge is about picking football players and stuff and what they do mathematically, how they manage their cap and what they think they should be allocating. I don't think they're willy-nilly about this. And I think the Earl Thomas thing and his admission makes me believe that he kicks his own ass as much as anybody when he drafts the wrong guy. And he's been at this a long time. And I don't think he ever wants to sign an Earl Thomas in the middle of the night again. And I think he did that first day on the job, literally, right?
Yeah. Look, he's going to make mistakes from time to time. Ozzie Newsome made plenty of mistakes over the years. I mean, no one bats 1,000 in that way. It's a matter of staying true to your process, though, and trying to minimize those mistakes in the same way that with the draft. I mean, the Ravens have missed on plenty of players. We can go through it. Rashad Perriman, Travis, wide receiver alone, you can go down the list and look at so many guys who didn't work out. So you have some of that, but it is a matter of always working on your process and always evaluating what you do, looking at your mistakes, not with we didn't do that right. More so, how do we learn from that so we don't do that again? And you just mentioned Earl Thomas. I mean, that's a case where, probably based on the little bit we've heard here and there, based on things the team has said, based on some reports here and there, based on history now that's come out about some of his time in Seattle that was even more combustible than was known at the time.
Send me a link on that. I don't even know about that. I mean, it's so salacious to begin with. He was such a weird cat. He was such a, square in a circle coming here. And I think they thought Pete had that thing buttoned up there. You know what I mean? Like, if you could survive enough there to win championships. But all that being said, he can't do that again with a $55 million, $11 million player. And I thought it was very telling and this goes back again to where they are post Ray Rice, right? To some degree. And they've had players with alcohol problems, drug problems. I mean, all of that, right? I mean, Suggs was his own universe of a bad human being, in my opinion, having witnessed it for 18 years. I was never a fan. But for DaCosta to say on and off the field in regard that even more so in the era of social media, in the era of where we are right now, that, you know, and I know this week, you know, these teams have players playing in the Super Bowl who've might not made the grade with the Ravens. Maybe the Ravens wouldn't want to welcome him in. And, you know, the errors of the Greg Hardys and the Ray Rices. I just know that that's one distraction that DaCosta doesn't want to deal with. And I think that that's the hardest part of these off seasons is figuring out who are you bringing in and why does that team not want him anymore?
Yeah. I mean, that's, you just said it. In most of these cases, unless it's just a guy who flat out hits the market and you're the highest bidder, you know, many of these guys that are available for a reason. Or in the case of players in college, you might have the best intel that you possibly can get. You might know their high school coach. You might know their youth football coach. You might know people, talk to people who's known them since they were 8 years old, but they're still, you know, in the
Ray Rice. 15 years ago, Aaron Hernandez could get drafted. Frosty Rucker could get drafted. You know, those people could get drafted. I don't know, especially in the PC era, like, you know, Josh Allen had skeletons when he was drafted that he is clearly moved on from. And that's in, you know, the kid down in Anne Arundel County who the left-hander with the moppy hair like mine, you know, Hader.
Josh Hader.
You know, he had issues, you know, like all of that exists in the modern era. Every one of these kids has had an Instagram since they were seven now, right? That's coming out of this draft. There's a little bit of what kind of person are you? And to some degree in the era of COVID, right? Even more so, I just think it's turned up even a little bit hotter for Eric specifically and for the organization to make sure they don't go in that direction. Because that's the thing you don't need.
Yeah, but at the same time, you also recognize that guys aren't going to be 100% perfect, and you do have because if you're looking for 100% perfection in that way, then you're probably not going to have an overly talented football team because, like every other aspect of life, people are not perfect, and people will make mistakes. It is a matter of doing your homework, though, and recognize, has that person grown from this? Was that an isolated incident? You know, anyone's entitled to, let's say, a reasonable mistake. You know,
well, even I'm just not talking about anything, this, we're now into the off season, right? All of these guys are going to go somewhere. And if Lamar's doing 120 miles an hour on 75 again and is in his car and putting that out, you know, like all of that over the next 8 months, guys are going to get COVID, guys are going to, whatever is going to happen, it's Eric's responsibility here to make the football team better before next September. And I thought that the press conference was a great example of going position to position, place to place. And I thought it was really good. And I guess it's the last time we're going to hear from any of these people for a long time, right? Literally.
Yeah. I thought it was good in the sense that I think he discussed some big picture things in an interesting way. I mean, you know, as you alluded to, I asked him about edge rusher and the fact that, I mean, we know the Ravens, their top five outside linebackers are pending free agents. We know they don't have a ton of cap space. And I also know, from my own reading, analytically speaking, football analytics people would tell you, and there have been studies done on this, that coverage on the back end is valued a little more highly than pressure and you know, the idea of a pass rusher. And a lot of that has to do with quarterbacks that get the ball out so darn quick now. I mean, it really does become a case of, I think edge rushers are still valuable, but I think the group of premium edge rushers has shrunk considerably in recent years because of quarterbacks getting the ball out so quick. So the question is, you look at a Matthew Judon, you look at a Yannick Ngakoue, you look at anyone who's going to hit the open market. Now, you know, there's some other decent edge rushers that are going to be out there. I'm not sure there's, you know, there isn't that Mac, you know, Terrell Suggs in his prime kind of guy that's going to hit the market. But
again, if that guy hits the market, he's a $21 million edge rusher.
Well, but that's the thing. You're going to pay them like they're Terrell Suggs at age 28 years old, at age 28. But are you going to get that production? So that's where you get into the same question. And we talk about this largely at the quarterback
position. Well, they could have paid Za'Darius Smith if they were, you know what I mean? Like if they could have.
And he's an example of a guy who has blossomed and become better and become a Pro Bowl player that he wasn't here for. And that's not to I'm not knocking the Ravens. I'm not knocking Za'Darius Smith. Sometimes that happens.
It's not knocking Eric DaCosta, who said, I believed in that kid. I drafted that kid.
Sure.
I scouted that kid, right?
Yeah, so you have some of that. But my point is that I was trying to make, you know, he discussed those things, but Eric's not going to give away any real specifics. You know, he talked about, you know, downplaying the need for a number one wide receiver. Do I think there was truth to that? Sure. Do I think he was speaking 100% truthfully? No, because since it occurred, you know, it came out that the Ravens were talking to Houston about DeAndre Hopkins way back when. Now, they didn't pull the trigger, and Bill O'Brien didn't want to trade Hopkins to an AFC, a fellow AFC contender. So, but
and by the way, the fact that you said Dez White got on the field, got on the roster, got on the team,
Dez
got
Bryant,
on the field.
Yeah.
Dez Bryant. Dez White, wrong era. They said it's Devon White. That would have been the wrong sport.
It was the wrong era for Dez Bryant because you wanted Dez Bryant from 6 years ago.
You know, where's Miles Boykin? Where's the kid we drafted from Texas? I mean, all of it. How are they not on the field in that circumstance with a team that's struggling to make the playoffs, that needs to win, that's looking for productivity specifically from that position, especially when Hollywood's dropping balls and Andrews was out with COVID and like all of that. The fact that that happened says that they're not good enough at that position. If you're looking for help, hey man, let's go back a year and a half ago to 14-2 and you and I getting together with our pal Josh Burns, right? You know, up at Adam's Jeep and like, hey man, like, you're out signing linebackers in week two or week three of the season. You know, that's great. And I love that Eric's improving the team, but it probably tells you didn't do enough in March and April.
Sure. Or it tells you young guys that you were counting on in March and April to take that step forward.
They just
don't
August.
Do it. They don't do it. Right. And that's what happened. I mean, it was Patrick Owosso and Kenny Young at that point. They bring in Josh Bynes. They bring in LJ Fort. LJ Fort's still here. And by the way, LJ Fort, while he didn't get near the attention, in my opinion, he was their best inside linebacker this year, quietly. Whereas
dude, there's
Patrick
a guy
King
that bounced around three organizations, right, as a special teamer.
Sure,
he's like a Bart Scott kind of cat, right?
That's a really good comparison. I mean, not to the splash play, high-profile level that Bart Scott ultimately achieved in going to New York and getting a big deal, but he's been solid. But the point you just made and bringing it back to wide receiver, and this is where, you know, Eric downplaying that look. First of all, you're not going to be out there saying, yeah, we're desperate to sign Allen Robinson. Because what does that do if Allen Robinson's agent hears that? His price just went up even more, especially saying, hey, this run-first offense that my client's not going to catch 120 balls in, you're going to have to pay me even more to get my client there. So there's some of that. There is validity to the fact that, no, they're not going to become a high-volume passing team. I've said that over and over and over. People that continue to use the 32nd-ranked passing game, it's kind of disingenuous and it's kind of, you're showing off not really understanding how this works. You need to look at yards per attempt. You need to look at efficiency. That's what this passing game is about. 2 years ago, when they went 14-2 and had this record setting offense, they were number one in passing DVOA. That meant they were incredibly efficient. Remember, Lamar Jackson threw 36 touchdown passes while passing, you know, in some cases, 200 times less, you know, 200 fewer attempts than other quarterbacks in the league. I mean, that's insane when you really think about it. You know, that's kind of like the guy in baseball that leads the league in home runs, but he only played 123 games. You
know? It's like comparing the stats of him to Joe Flacco. You would see hard it was for Joe Flacco to throw 36 touchdown passes.
Correct. You know, first of all, Joe never did that. And second of all, yeah, you're right. You look, and that's where you look at yards per attempt. So, however, when you look at the Ravens this past year, their efficiency fell. Their yards per attempt fell. Lamar Jackson was not as efficient. His completion percentage did fall. Now, I will remind everyone, for as much as we talk, you know, this hand-wringing about the passing game, go look at what Lamar's passer rating was this year. It was like 99.2, I think it was. So for all the hand-wringing and concern and not throwing the ball well enough and all that discussion, the numbers are still pretty darn good. He ended up finishing with, you know, touchdown passes. He had the fourth highest single season total in team history. So let's just keep this.
Or as Joe Flacco would say to me, we win a lot of ball games around here.
No question about it. But, and this is where I'll bring it back to the analytics conversation. If you're the Ravens, if you're John Harbaugh, if you're Eric DaCosta, if you're Joe Ortiz, everyone in the organization that has a credible voice in decision-making, they also recognize from an analytics standpoint, the passing game has more value than the running game. And here, you know, I'll use the simple math, you know, comparison that I always give you when we talk about this. The Ravens averaged 5.5 yards per carry this year. Go look at the worst passing games in the league and see how many yards per attempt they average from a passing standpoint. It's higher than 5.5 per attempt. So that tells you the passing game is more valuable. Now, the Ravens, you know, with their zigging while everyone else is zagging, they have Lamar Jackson, who is the exception, right? He is the, you know, he breaks the norm there.
He's the reason they run.
Sure. But that said, they would also privately tell you, as much as they might downplay about wide receiver publicly and talk about the fact that they're going to be a run, they're going to continue to be a run first team. And I believe them there, and they should continue to be a run first team, but they absolutely do have to get better throwing the football because, I mean, just look at it. Look at the teams that were in the AFC or in the conference championship games this past weekend. Look where they rank passing wise compared to where they rank running the ball. I mean, the passing game is more valuable. It just is from looking in a mathematical vacuum. It is.
But you know, does it cost more to get there?
Well, but that's the question. How do you go about building that? What do you do to improve that? You know, some people have said, well, you don't want to improve your passing game at the expense of the running game. I understand where that sentiment is coming from, but other than replacing Greg Roman, I don't really know what you would do to this team that would really make you start to really suffer from a run game standpoint. I mean, Lamar Jackson's the guy that drives this. So short of replacing Greg Roman or replacing Lamar Jackson, I don't think there's anything they could do from a standpoint of trying to improve their passing game that's going to markedly hurt their running game. My point is you can do both. You can continue to be this.
When you do pass it, you need to pass it and catch it, and it needs to advance the football, period. You don't need to pass more, you need to pass better.
Better, exactly. And this goes back to you and I would talk about it.
And if you pass better, you will theoretically run more.
Yeah, correct. You'll run more in the second half because you'll have bigger leads in the second half. You know that's
see 2019.
Yeah, you know we you know that
I watched that whole season without a mask.
There are so many things that we say as football fans and as football analysts and as media who've been doing it a long time that frankly, it's kind of bunk. It's kind of BS. You know, the idea of quote establishing the run game for play action. Analytics have proven you don't necessarily have to do that. You know, analytics would tell you should throw more on first down. I would tell you right now by looking at how the Ravens, you know, looking at their success rate by down, they should probably throw the ball a little bit more on first down. Lamar Jackson was at his best throwing the football on first down this year. Why is that? Well, on first down, you have a run first team. You have more base defense out there that's not equipped to necessarily defend the pass as well as if it's a nickel or dime package out there. So
you get a mismatch.
Mix in a few more passes on first down. And guess what? You do that and you have success doing that. You'll have more runs on second and short and third and short than being in third and six or third and five or third and 10 and having to throw the ball in a
position. But if Hollywood drops the ball, you're in second and 10.
Well, of course.
Or if Lamar lets the ball sail.
For sure. But at the same time, you know, and we talked about this for the first two thirds of this season, they didn't run particularly well on first down early in the season. Now, late in the year, yeah, they got in a groove. They changed up some of their scheme. J.K. Dobbins became the man as their running backs go. It became him and Gus Edwards, and Mark Ingram, of course, was a healthy scratch. So, you know, my point is that there are definitely things they can do to improve their passing game without changing their identity. No, and this is where, you know, Harbaugh did this a little bit last week. And look, I don't want to pick on John too much because, you know, I can understand being a little defensive when you're talking about a team that's won 26 games over the last 2 years. But, you know, kind of talking about, you know, we're not going to throw it 40 or 45 times. I don't think anyone that has a credible, informed, realistic opinion about this offense is calling for the Ravens to throw it 45 times a game. I think people are looking at the yards per attempt. People are looking at the production. You know, I'm not moved.
They're not going to change it. They just need to.
They need to
make it
be more efficient. Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And people were so hung up on them being last in passing yards per game. They were 27th in 2019. You know, I mean,
here's the thing about them. Like, as much as you want to bitch one way or another, they went through COVID. They went through injury. They went through all of that. They were on the goal line, sure, you know, with a chance to win a game in Buffalo on a Saturday night against a good team, against a good team, right, you know, and they had a chance to win that football game, and they didn't make two or three or four plays that easily, including kicks that they always make, right? Like, sure, all of those things. And honestly, the thing that conspired that confounds me about them losing, that I'm still scratching my head about, is you're a run first team on a really bad weather night where the wind's no good. This is where your bread and butter is. You need to run. You need to run well. And if you don't, you put 3 points up and your quarterback gets hit in the head because you can't snap the ball. You go, yeah, you go home. You know what, yeah, I mean? So they hit their water level, but there is that point where, like, for all of this bitching and moaning and it, they were on the goal line, and sure, a kid that's the MVP of the league threw the ball that he shouldn't have thrown. And if he didn't, they might still be. I don't think they would have beat Kansas City. I quite frankly, I think they would lose 7 out of 10 to Buffalo. I think Buffalo was a better team for here and for now for what they did. And I think they proved that in Buffalo. So all of that, if they're going to get better on that kind of a night, you built the team to go win on a 15-degree windy, yeah, night in Buffalo. You didn't build a team around Joe Flacco to Anquan Boldin and let's have Torrey Smith and let's throw 42. You know, let's get the 6'6" strapping Matt Ryan. They didn't build it that way. They built it to win that game, and they didn't win that game.
And
that part sucks.
Yeah, and that's what's frustrating, and that's
a team that couldn't run the ball. You know, team that couldn't score themselves. Yeah, I mean, that's the part where I scratch my head more than 14-2 last year, where they just spit up on themselves. Now it's like, to your point, it's 3 years in, whatever the trend is or whatever the we need to get better is, they're so close. And I don't know that they're ever going to get a better condition to win than to try to run the ball on a cold night in the dead of winter in January. And if you can't do that, good night. You know,
there's two things there. One, how do you get, you know, when you're back in that position, whether it's in Buffalo, whether it's in Kansas City, you know, if Deshaun Watson winds up somewhere else in the AFC, if it's that team, you know, I mean, there's going to be a lot of interesting quarterback decisions around this league and how that could impact teams. I mean, look at Tampa. You know, a year ago, no one was thinking about Tampa being in the Super Bowl, and now it's Tom Brady. So
it's like the funny questions for Eric about who the backup quarterback's going to be. Like, Eric's like, I have no idea. I could give you a list of 20 guys. I don't know. You know what I mean? It's not even February. It's January. You know, like, so Eric doesn't know where these pieces, sure, are. And we all want the answer. Like, who are you going to draft? Oh, my God. I have no idea.
Oh, yeah. Right? I mean, you're always going to, and they're not going to tell you anyway. But he doesn't know. Sure. Well, and this is where we do come back to, you know, what we mentioned at the beginning with the salary cap still uncertain, still not set for 2021. What does that mean for the Ravens in terms of trying to keep some of their, 16 free agents who played for them, at least played some game action? What does that mean for trying to bring in a wide receiver? Whether, you know, not even necessarily talking about the best wide receiver out there, but I think it stands to reason that it's a very reasonable ask, a very reasonable expectation for this team to bring in an established wide receiver that can move the meter. Now, it doesn't mean it's going to be a guy that's going to be an all-pro. It doesn't mean it's DeAndre Hopkins or Stephon Diggs, but, you know, a guy who's played, you know, a Marvin Jones type, you know, a guy who's played and had success in this league. Maybe he's been to a Pro Bowl or two.
I don't even know what the number is, though. What's he going to catch? 50 balls for 880 yards? I mean, I don't know. What does that look like?
Well, but you look at what Marquise Brown has done. You look at what Mark Andrews has done, and you kind of base it off of that. You know, I don't think it's unreal. You know, if let's say the Ravens had brought in DeAndre Hopkins this past year, do I think he would have caught 120 balls here? No, of course not. Do I think he still could have caught 80 and gone over 1,000 yards and caught 9 touchdowns or, you know, numbers that would still have him in the Pro Bowl conversation? Let's say, yeah, I think that's reasonable. But, you know, that's on the higher end. What does that mean if it's Marvin Jones or, you know, if Anquan Boldin was 30 years old again and the Ravens were bringing him in again, you know, go back 10 years when they did that, you know, what would those numbers look like? You know, it might be 950 yards. It might be catching 68 passes. It might be catching 7 touchdowns. So, you know, but I think it stands to reason there's clearly that. But when you don't know what the salary cap's going to look like, when you don't know how that's going to impact your effort to maintain many, you know, and re-sign many of your own, It's tough right now. And that's not to say that Eric DaCosta and the front office won't have a plan, but that's where, you know, going back to what you just said, it is difficult to expect any specifics. I mean, you know, the backup quarterback, I'm guessing it's going to be Trace McSorley or Tyler Huntley, because who else are you going to bring in that it's really going to matter if Lamar Jackson gets hurt? You know, I mean, you know, we kind of goes back to the old.
By the way, my dude Greg Bedard sent me a big F you. I got to get him on sometime for Boston Sports Journal. The day after, he's like, why was Tyler Huntley running around? I mean, like, what were they doing with a backup quarterback situation if that was the case? And I said, well, you know, they did have RG3. They did have the kid from Penn State. Yeah. They are, you know, like that sort of dried up. And I said, well, you want him to go get a guy off the street? I mean, all the Colin Kaepernick, I'm all for Colin Kaepernick. And I said to him, they tried to sign Kaepernick. They were the only team that legitimately sat there and talked about it. Like, they legitimately did. I know that to be factual. Sure. So I can stand on that before the Sox thing came out and the wife down in Atlanta. But I would just say there is a perception on all of that. But, like, once you've lost a couple of quarterbacks, I mean, you can't go out on the street and do that. But I heard you, the little Animal House angel, saying, what difference does it make who the backup quarterback is at that point, right?
Yeah. I'm always reminded of Tom Moore, the great, you know, great offensive mind in Indianapolis with Peyton Manning. And he was once asked, and I'll clean up the language because it's it's pretty colorful from what I've read, but he was once asked about the backup quarterback, why they don't get more reps behind Peyton Manning in practice. And he said, son, if we lose 18, we're bleeped, and we don't practice bleeped around here. And that, I mean, that's just stuck with me for a long time because, but think about it. I mean, it's such a, and look, I'm not saying that you shouldn't invest anything in your backup quarterback. I think RG3 was a really nice backup quarterback to have for Lamar Jackson these last couple years. But at the same time, look at the money, which, you know, he wasn't making a whole lot, a couple million dollars. I'm not saying it was a major investment, but look how he played against Pittsburgh on that post-Thanksgiving. And look, I'm not saying he should have gone out there and lit up the Pittsburgh defense by any stretch of the imagination. That was a really tough position for him to be in. At the same time, he's a 30-year-old who had been in the league a number of years, yet who looked more like the rookie when he played? RG3 that day or Tyler Huntley against Buffalo a couple Saturdays ago? So you kind of get into this position of, you know, don't overvalue a backup quarterback either, because more often than not, for every time you might have a Chad Henne come in and do okay for you for a quarter or two or for a game or two, you'll have some other guys that you're going to give a lot of money to and you're going to be
see fools. Tom and Nick.
I mean, look at Matt Schaub, who just finally announced his retirement. You know, that was a big thing when Tyrod Taylor left Baltimore. It's like, oh, you know, Joe Flacco has an established backup here. You know, they replaced Tyrod with this guy. And look how Matt Schaub played after Flacco went down with the torn ACL. I mean, you know, so you do get to a point where you still have to value positions and roles on football teams properly. It's why, you know, Justin Tucker is the greatest kicker in NFL history. Does that mean the Ravens should pay him $20 million a year? Of course not. You know, you still have to value positions and roles on football teams properly. It's one reason why they're waving goodbye to Morgan Cox, who's been fantastic for a decade. And you know, it's always a shame to see, you know, a former Super Bowl champion depart, but he's 34 years old. He's a little more expensive as long snappers go. They have Nick Moore, who's 28, so he's 6 years younger. He was on the practice squad all year, and they got an idea of what he is. And they think he can do just as good of a job, and they'll save, you know, $600,000 in the process, which, you know, I'm not saying that's a whole lot of money, but when you're talking about trying to figure out the salary cap, you know, that matters. So it's all about making these difficult decisions. The Ravens have plenty to make, but at the same time, they are a team that, as you pointed out, they were on the goal line, a play away from tying the game going into the fourth quarter. They're not that far away, but you have to recognize, yeah, you got some tough decisions and some big moves to make, you hope, to finally get over the hump in 2021.
Luke Jones can be found, Baltimore Luke, out on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and luke@wnst.net. We got sponsors all around. I'm going to be telling you about them all week. You're going to be checking out all of our Super Bowl 35. It's not residue. It's current conversations. We're finding Many of our friends, including our partner, head coach Brian Billick, on behalf of the Living Classrooms Foundation, Mike Smith, Marvin Lewis, Jack Del Rio, Mike Flynn, Rod Woodson, Tony Siragusa, they're all dropping by here, including Chris Redman, who I just looked up his bio, who spent 9 years in the National Football League, as we talked about quarterbacks who worked as backups. I am Nestor. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, celebrating 20 years. A championship and a certain night, Tampa. Beautiful thing. We're going to have a good time around here this week. Stay with us.